Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly alongside you on this Tuesday edition of the program. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Plenty to get to on the show today. Titans getting ready for week 3 against the Colts. What needs to improve around Cam Ward? We'll get into that. Does this feel like a must-win game for Brian Callahan at 0-2? And we'll also look around the NFL a little bit. 10-2-0 teams, 10-0-2 teams. Who is a little overrated? Who's going to make a run after a slow start? We'll get into all of that throughout the show. Nick Frazier, thanks for coming on. We got our golden caramel coffees this morning.
It's great.
It's a good start to the day.
Hey, life's good now. We're back, you know? We are. I think that's the blood that fuels us today.
We're almost a week into having the golden caramel coffee back, and I've got to say, life has been better since it's returned to the cabinet up there. It's going to be a tough day when I come in and realize that we're out. And I have to go back to regular coffee.
There's just a glow about you. I don't know if it's the golden caramel. I don't know, man.
I feel like a different person when I've got the caramel coffee going. So, been a good start to the day. We will get into the Titans coming up in just a minute. But I did want to start with the Monday Night Football doubleheader last night. And we'll start with game number one. Heck of a game between the Bucs and Texans. And the Texans are now 0-2. Baker Mayfield did just enough down the stretch. I will say, if they did lose that game, the Bucs, Todd Bowles and the special teams coordinator would have had a lot of questions to answer, with the special teams coordinator getting a punt blocked, then letting a huge return happen a couple of plays later, and then Todd Bowles just refusing to call timeouts on that last drive. It ended up working out. They left the Texans with no time, but really strange clock management from Todd Bowles last night.
Yeah, I don't know what the whole timeout thing. I don't know if he was worried that if they'd scored too fast and that there'd be too much time left on the clock. I really don't know. That's what confused me the most, because Houston, I thought, scored too early. They scored before the two-minute warning.
Yeah.
So I gave, Tampa 4 opportunities there, and you're just thinking, what are they doing? I think it was poor clock management on both sides of the last 2 minutes.
Right. Nick Chubb running that in from 25 yards out honestly may have been one of the better outcomes in that spot for the Buccaneers. They gave them enough time to go down the field. Bucs score. They are 2-0. Houston falls to 0-2. So that was a great game. Game two of the doubleheader wasn't all that interesting. 20-9, the Chargers beat the Raiders. Quentin Johnston starting to look like the TCU Quentin Johnston. He had another long touchdown last night. But the biggest thing that came out of the late game last night was Peter Schrager's report on Tom Brady being in the coach's booth. Parker, do we have this ready? Let's take a listen to Peter Schrager talking about Tom Brady's involvement with the Las Vegas Raiders.
We've got a special member of the Raiders ownership group here today, and that's Tom Brady, who is in the house and is with the coach's box tonight. I was wondering how much Brady really had an involvement with this team. We hear so much about Brady as the owner. Chip Kelly told us that he talks to Brady 2 to 3 times a week. They go through film, they go through the game plan, and Brady is a luxury for the coaches. Who else has an owner who's actually been there and done that?
5% stake.
That's an amazing sight right there.
Now, Chip Kelly uses them as a resource every single week.
Yep, why wouldn't you?
We take it to Hampton. Herbert launches downfield. Back shoulder throw. Trying to get it to Quentin Johnston. He really had a breakout game opener against the Chiefs. Luke Kelly broke it up. There's Brady, top row. Not many games he's able to attend because of his Sunday duties on Fox.
Think about the advantage. Chip Kelly saying 2 to 3 times a week, I could call Tom Brady, hey, what do I do in double A gap pressure versus this defensive corner? Patrick Graham, the defensive coordinator of the Raiders, talked about in the first preseason game, they struggled to tackle. Brady sent him a text, figure it out fast. So it seems he's very involved.
So there you go. That was the broadcast last night on ESPN. Dan Orlovsky, Chris Fowler, Peter Schrager talking about how involved Tom Brady is in not just the team and the organization, but the game planning process that Chip Kelly talks to him 2 to 3 times a week. And you've got Tom Brady sitting in the coach's box with a headset on during the game.
In a full suit.
This is ridiculous that he is allowed to be a part of production meetings and be in practices getting ready for these Fox games and still be involved in the game planning process for the Las Vegas Raiders. You mentioned before we went on air that you think ESPN might have messed up broadcasting this out there, how involved Tom Brady is, but how does the NFL allow this? Like, how is he allowed to be this involved with the Raiders and be a minority owner with the Raiders and still be able to talk to coaches, players, watch practice of all the other teams when it could seriously be a competitive advantage for the Raiders moving forward?
And I think it is. I mean, you mentioned going to practices and so forth. I don't know. Do you remember last season or the season before when Brady became the minority owner? And along with that was with Fox. And Fox said, oh, you can't go to any of the production meetings. You can't do any of this.
Right.
And the NFL basically rewrote their rules and said, oh, no, you can do this. You can do that. But they did it quietly, like under the rug type thing. And that's why I think ESPN probably shouldn't have panned the camera to him and talked about him too much, because it seemed like ESPN was, I guess, trying to exploit it a little bit, but not to the full extent, because Orlovsky, Lewis Riddick, Chris Fowler, they kind of were talking about it, but not directly, if that makes sense. Obviously, Orlovsky said 2 to 3 times a week, talks to Chip Kelly, but minus that, they're like, wow, he's up there. They're like almost shocked, and they're like, wow, he's up there. They're talking.
And we had the conversation when the news came out that Brady would be allowed to be in production meetings and do all of the things that a usual broadcaster does, that even before we knew how involved he was in game planning, that's kind of ridiculous. Like, there is a clear conflict of interest there for Tom Brady. And I think it was a Bears reporter who put it out last night that Tom Brady is calling the Bears game next week. And then guess who plays the Bears in week 4? The Raiders. Mm-hmm. It's like he is going to get a full-on scouting report, going and watching practice and talking to all the players. I hope they tell him nothing the rest of the year. Like, I hope that all the coaches and players on these teams realize how ridiculous this is that he's even allowed to be in these meetings and just tell them nothing. And eventually it's going to get to the point where Brady's going to have to make a decision of like, hey, I'm going to be a bad broadcaster if I keep doing these production meetings because I'm getting told lies. And they should tell him lies because it's ridiculous that he is allowed to be in these meetings.
Yeah, and I think it was last night after the game, Pete Carroll was asked by a reporter about offensive coordinator Chip Kelly talking to Tom Brady 3 times a week, quote, not accurate. So I don't know what that's about. I don't know if he's trying to cover something up, but something the puzzle pieces are not matching up here.
I mean, I'm sure the Raiders – maybe the Raiders didn't want that much getting out. Like, I get what you're saying of, like, ESPN may have – I don't think they slipped up. Like, I think they meant to do that, obviously. But I think maybe they didn't realize that the Raiders weren't trying to make that as well-known as they could. Like, Dan Orlovsky saying, like, that Chip Kelly's texting about specific defensive coordinators and what they do. That is – it's such a conflict of interest. And Tom Brady – I get it. He wants to do everything, and he's getting paid $100 million over however many years to be the top analyst for Fox.
Seems and like 10 years, $375 million.
Whatever his contract is. He's getting paid a lot of money to be their top analyst, and he wants to still be involved in trying to win a Super Bowl, and that's why he owns part of the Raiders. At some point, he's got to make a decision. Like, the NFL can't just pander to him because he's Tom Brady. It's so ridiculous that he's allowed to do this. And 6806 says it's no different than when they were filming practices when he was with the Patriots. That's Mitch in Bellevue.
It's fair.
It's fair. Not the first time that Tom Brady has bent the rules.
It's almost like the NFL bent the rules for him, though. That's what it feels like.
Well, the good news is the Titans play the Raiders in a couple weeks, and the Titans are never going to be in a good enough game to play in one of Tom Brady's slots. So that's the good news, that he won't get the inside information there. But when I listen to that report, it's like they're telling on themselves. I'm like, what? Why are we running this? You're basically saying that you have a clear conflict of interest every time you go into these meetings. The NFL needs to do the right thing and say Tom Brady's not allowed in these production meetings anymore. He's not allowed to go to practice. And if Tom Brady wants to keep doing both, he has to do it with the disadvantage of not being able to do this stuff. Like, that is his choice to be a minority owner. They have to make sure that the integrity of the game is everything to the NFL. And that's why you see all the gambling rules and the suspensions of even if you're betting on the NBA, but you're doing it on team
grounds,
property,
yeah,
you get suspended. The integrity of the game is that important to the NFL. You have a blatant, clear conflict of interest, and you're allowing it to happen. I think the NFL should come out this week and say, yeah, Tom Brady's not allowed in these meetings anymore.
Yeah, and like you said earlier, you have to choose either you want to be a minority owner or in production. Because I don't know if you saw Tom Brady's game. I think it was Dallas versus the Giants. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. No. They did Dallas, and who did they play week one?
Whatever it was this past Sunday.
This past week he did Eagles-Chiefs.
Yeah. It was Gronkowski and Brady. It was just weird. It was almost like in the production meeting they were like force-feeding questions to Tom. And that's how it was going to be after the game because it felt disingenuous. Like it's almost like his production meetings are not. There it is up on the
TV. Yeah, we got First Take on. They're talking about it right now. Like it's
an issue.
I don't know. You know, conspiracy theory time.
Mm.
ESPN wants to get Tom Brady kicked off of Fox broadcasts because they're like, hey, look, one of our competitors is bending the rules for this minority owner.
Not opposed to that.
Complete conspiracy theory. I'm sure that Peter Schrager was just like, hey, this is it's rare to have a player of that caliber with that much knowledge who gets to help with your game plan. Like, sure. It's an advantage for the Raiders to have Tom Brady as part of their ownership group. But it's also an advantage that he gets to go behind the scenes for all of these other teams. And even, like, I don't know. Well, how about this? The Raiders play the Chiefs twice this year.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady just went to Kansas City and talked with all the Chiefs players and coaches. I'm sure that some of the stuff he learned could help the Raiders. Like, it cannot keep happening.
Yeah, and with his track record of being with the Patriots and the cheating scandals and all that, how can you trust the guy fully to say, oh, I'm not going to say this to XYZ person or Pete Carroll? Like, I look at the whole Tom Brady situation. Like, I don't know if you saw this, but he made a big news about how he's coming out of retirement for a flag football game in Saudi Arabia. Like, you're getting paid $150 million for that. Go do that if you want to.
Yeah.
If you want to be a minority owner, be a minority owner. I think he should be some form of a coach, like a quarterback's coach or a offensive coordinator. Like, you have to start picking lanes here.
Right. He has to pick what he wants to do with his future. And I think he wants to be a minority owner. And if he wants to do that, great. Go do that. But you can't be around all 31 other teams and get to talk to their players and coaches behind the scenes. Because even if he thinks, oh, well, I'm not going to purposefully give any inside information, subliminally, there's going to be some things of like, oh, well, they told me this. And I just hope that no one's telling him anything. Like, if that's how you want to do it, Tom Brady, then expect coaches and players to tell you absolutely nothing. And guess who that hurts? That hurts Kevin Burkhardt. Mm-hmm. That hurts the rest of that crew because they're not going to be getting the information that you typically would in those production meetings, which as somebody who's done play-by-play broadcasts, like obviously not at the NFL level, but when I do Vanderbilt soccer last week or back in college when I did Virginia Tech volleyball, most of what I used on the broadcast came from those coaches' calls of like asking questions and getting information. And, you know, if there was an injury or something, they'd let us know and who's going to be filling in. Like, it's really important stuff for these broadcast teams. And not only is Tom Brady not going to get it, but they're not going to tell anything to anybody else because it's a clear conflict of interest. It's ridiculous. Wanted to start the show with that because I could not believe just how openly they came out and were like, yeah, Tom Brady talks to the offensive coordinator 2 to 3 times a week while he's in Kansas City getting ready for the Chiefs game. It's can't happen.
Look, if they can go back and see some of his phone calls, like if they can kind of geolocate those through like cell towers, I don't know if it'd get that intrigued and intense to it. But if they were to do that and NFL were to investigate it, I think there might be some fishy stuff there.
I think the NFL just needs to pull it back, go back to what it was last year. Tom Brady's not allowed in production meetings. That should be what it is. I don't think they're going to do it because it seems like Tom Brady is above the law, at least at this point. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have any thoughts, questions, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you. Let's get into the Titans coming up next. Cam Ward, I think by all accounts, has looked solid in his first two starts. I think he is lived up to expectations. He's made plays, has not thrown an interception yet, but everything around him has not been all that great. What needs to improve the most around Cam Ward? We'll get into that coming up next. We are off and running on this Tuesday morning. Next man up here on 102.5 The Game. Later today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds take on the Louisville Bats. First pitch is at 5:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan is presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game. Eddie in California on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, good morning, guys. No TD today. TD is going to be on Thursdays moving forward. So Thursday, we will have TD for the full show. The Titans moving around some of their media schedule. We had to shift TD. So Thursday, TD will be in from 9 to noon. Excited for that. Let's get into the Titans here. Titans 0-2, 33-19 loss to the Rams on Sunday. Cam Ward, he's the focal point of this season. Like, the wins and losses are going to come and go. Like, a 3-win season, a 6-win season, that matters for Brian Callahan. It doesn't matter as much for Cam Ward. You'd like to see him win some games, but it's all about seeing the development and the growth, and I think he's looked good through the first two games. There's stuff to improve upon, but I think he's looked good. Everything else around him on the offense has not been all that good. The play calling has been questionable at best. The offensive line has allowed him to be sacked 11 times, and Cam Ward is responsible for a couple of those, held the ball too long. And the receivers, pretty much outside of Elik Iyemanner, have left a lot to be desired as well. My question for you, Nick Frazier, what needs to get better the fastest? Like, Cam Ward, with everything bad going on around him, has still found a way to show some progress, some flashes. But what could help him the most if it's able to improve quickly this week?
That's a great question. I would say, as a scapegoat answer, I'd say, oh, the offensive line needs to protect better. Oh, the wide receivers need to catch the ball, whatever it is. I think Cam Ward just needs to throw the ball away quicker. Like, if something's not there through one or two read progressions, throw it away. Because then that kind of cuts down on your sacks. Sure, it doesn't prolong the play where you can be as creative as you are, as Cam Ward was with that Elik Iyemanner touchdown. But besides that, if he can go through his reads, and maybe the wide receivers need to get out of their routes quicker. Maybe that's something they have to look at. I don't know. But that's something I would look at for Cam Ward, is just go through the reads, and if they're not there, just toss it out, man.
It's all been bad. Yeah. Like, Calvin Ridley has not done enough. He wasn't as blatantly bad on Sunday. And, like, the quote-unquote drop that he had on third down, like, yeah, that's a ball that you hope that your number one wide receiver would catch. But Emmanuel Forbes made a pretty nice play punching that ball out. Like, that was not an easy catch to hold on to with the way the defender played it. So give him a break on that. But overall, through 2 weeks, Calvin Ridley has not been good enough. And we'll talk about that a little more later on. I think Brian Callahan needs to be better the fastest. Like, the play calling, there's been times it's been good. I really liked some of the plays where they got him on the move on Sunday. Like, you saw the rollout, Calvin Ridley crossing, and he was able to find him. He missed the one to Chim Dike a little bit later on in the game. I just think Brian Callahan needs to find a rhythm and a flow in his play calling that he hasn't found yet. Like, the feel for the situations in the game just isn't there right now for Brian Callahan. And I thought last year there were times when it was good. Like, I didn't think the play calling was atrocious last year. He had much bigger problems than play calling in his first year as a head coach. This year, though, I think the play calling it's not putting Cam Ward in the best situations. They're getting behind the sticks, and I think that's a big issue. Maybe it is because of the offensive line. And that last year we saw a lot of Brian Callahan calling plays kind of scared of his offensive line. And I'm wondering if maybe that's coming around again, especially with J.C. Latham hurt. Cam Ward's been sacked 11 times already through 2 weeks. I'm wondering if maybe it's gotten to the point where Brian Callahan feels like he can't open up the playbook because there's just no time to protect Cam Ward.
Yeah, that's a possibility. You mentioned Shim Dike just a bit ago. I think if Callahan, and talk about play calling as well, Callahan needs to use more of those jet sweeps with Dike. I think it stretches the game out a little bit. It keeps the defense on their toes, keeps the defense honest. It makes it not as predictable. And from that point, you're able to kind of maybe, I don't know, run the ball at a different angle or maybe, I don't know, throw the ball, I'd say, more often than not. It just, the predictability level is not as high. So I think if you can do that, I think that's a big plus. But you're right. Callahan, his play calling, it's almost like you're looking at the call sheet and you're sticking to plays 1 through 6 on this drive. You have to deviate and go, how about play 12? Let's go here. Like, he's not reading the game. He's reading the page.
Yeah, and early on, the drives have actually not been horrible. Like, and this was an issue last year of some of the scripted drives ended up being pretty good. Like, the Titans moved the ball early on, and then Brian Callahan, when he has to make these decisions on the fly, it doesn't always seem to work. And the end of the first half sequence this week, I understand why he played it conservative. Like, I really do, because he got eviscerated for being too aggressive. But you also have to understand the difference in those situations of one of those, you're at your own 7, and you got to go the length of the field to even get in field goal range. Like, you got to go 50 yards to get into field goal range. The other, you just had a ridiculous touchdown from your quarterback. Cody Barton picks off Matthew Stafford, and you're already basically in field goal range with 2 timeouts. Like, there's a difference in those situations, and that's kind of what I'm talking about with Brian Callahan just not having a feel for these offensive situations and the flow of the game, where that's a spot where, yeah, maybe you don't go completely all out and get yourself thrown out of field goal range, but take one shot. Just see what Cam Ward can do. He just made 2 unbelievable throws to Elik Iyemanner on the last drive. You've got all the momentum. You're heading into the locker room. Like, take one shot. And he didn't. He ran it a couple of times, set up the field goal. I get it. After last week, when the entire city was going after him for how horrible the decision was to be aggressive at the end of the half, I get maybe being a little gun-shy in that situation, but that's why, like, you have to understand these different situations and make decisions based on that, not based on what happened last week.
Right, and another point to that, you mentioned going into halftime. I think something that needs to improve for this Titans team as a whole, the second half conditioning. This team is a first-half team. They can't finish out games. It seems like they lose their mojo when they get into the second half. I don't know if it's Brian Callahan's play calling when it comes to the second half, or guys are just gassed. I mean, I kind of said this before the season, but you look at this Titans defense, it's not young for the most part. I mean, Arden Key.
You have some young pieces, yeah, but yeah.
But majority of those guys are more vets, which is a good thing for the development of the younger pieces. But when it comes to the stamina and to finish out games, you don't have the rotation there.
Well, and I think that's what you saw with L'Jarius Sneed at the end of that game. He looked good. I really liked what I saw from L'Jarius Sneed on Sunday. I think that is the best game he's played as a Titan. But I think you did see he wasn't quite in full-on football shape yet. And it was strange how they went from, oh, L'Jarius Sneed's on a hard 20-snap pitch count, and, like, we're not going to play him the whole second half, to he's going to play 92% of the snaps in 95-degree heat on Sunday. And I think he ran out of gas, and Davante Adams took advantage of that towards the end. Overall, I thought he played well, but I agree. I think the Titans right now aren't talented enough, and I don't think they're well-coached enough to play with these teams for a full 60 minutes. They've proven they can play with them for 35, 45 minutes, but they ran out of gas, and Matthew Stafford and Puka Nacua and Davante Adams, they out-talented the Titans down the stretch. And that's going to happen this year, but you'd like to see in a game like this against the Colts this week that you can play with a team like that. I know they're 2-0, but I don't think they're as talented as the Rams. They did beat the Broncos. I would say,
hold your horses on that.
Right.
Pun intended, I guess.
Yeah, because there you go.
The Broncos, even though they beat the Titans and they lose to the Colts, I don't think they're that good of a team. I think Sean Payton's just that good of a play caller. He's able to kind of finagle the game a little bit.
Well, and Bo Nix has not been good through the first couple of weeks. Daniel Jones has. Robbie Stanley guaranteed a Titans win We're going to talk about that a little bit later on this hour of, do the Titans need a win? Like, is this a must-win game for Brian Callahan? Maybe not for the team, because, again, the expectations for the team, I don't know if there are any must-win games on the schedule for Cam Ward or anything. But for Brian Callahan saving his job, this might be a must-win. We'll get into that coming up next. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly with you on this Tuesday morning. Plenty more to get to with the Titans. We'll look across the NFL. Joe Burrow, out for 3 months. We'll look into that as well. Plenty more to come here on Next Man Up, 102.5 The Game. That was Cam Ward talking about staying in front of the sticks. I can't wait to hear what he's got for us this week. One of the greatest traditions across the NFL. Cook them and eat their stripes. That was the Bengals one. I'm excited to see what he's got for the Titans this week. We'll have to play the new one when it comes out Thursday or whenever he releases those. Colts Titans coming up on Sunday.
Got to give them good props for the creativity.
Noon kick. Yeah, that was good. Cam Ward talking about getting behind the sticks, and that's been an issue for the Titans, is that, you know, you watch that game on Sunday, and pretty much all of the third downs the Rams had were third and five or less. And the Titans got stuck in third and eight or more way too much. And that's the offensive line. It's also play calling. Cam Ward did say after the game on Sunday that Brian Callahan's only called two games for him, and he hopes he calls a lot more. But I'm wondering if this just is easier to just rip the Band-Aid off and move on. But there's also the worry of, you always talk about it, that does changing the play caller mid-season and then probably adding a new one at the end of the year, does that stunt a quarterback's progression when he has to continue to learn new systems, new play callers, and new ways to play the game?
For Cam Ward, I don't think so. I mean, the guy's been in four or five different systems throughout college. What, Incarnate Word?
Washington State.
Yeah. Miami. All those different places. I don't think it affects him because he's a good quarterback. I've mentioned this to Chase and Connor, Parker multiple times. This guy does really a good job at making different, you know, adjustments at the offensive line. Before snaps, he does a good job at audible.
He looks in control.
Yeah, he's in control of the game. I don't think ripping off the Band-Aid is going to affect him that much. I think he's handling himself as a true pro. Like you said, he hopes Callahan's going to call plays for him in the future. Like, if that's the case, go ahead. Like, rip the Band-Aid off. Because if Callahan's gone, more than likely Nick Holtz will be gone and they, you know, upgrade somebody else. Maybe Bill Hardigree stays. I don't know. But I think it's beneficial because – What's there to lose?
Yeah, and I wonder who ends up being the play caller. Would it just be Nick Holtz? Like, or does Holtz go with Brian Callahan? Is it Hardigree? Mike McCoy could end up taking over as the head coach. Like, does he call plays? It all would be a mess. But I do wonder if it continues to look as bad as it's been, if pulling the plug early is better than just letting it sit like this and continuing to lose and continuing to make bad decisions, and maybe getting a fresh start for Cam Ward is better to do it earlier than later.
I think it is. I'm going to use a comparison to college football. I know it's probably not the best thing to do, but Billy Napier in Florida with DJ Lagway, people are kind of saying, oh, DJ Lagway is just throwing interceptions left and right. I kind of blame that on Billy Napier a little bit, the guidance from him as a play caller. I don't think Lagway is a terrible quarterback. I think his growth is being stunted by Billy Napier. So I'm thinking it's kind of the same situation with Brian Callahan with the lack of production in his play calling. I think it's stunting the growth a little bit of Cam Ward, but I think Cam's able to adjust to that.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Let's go to our phone lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam from Portland is on the line wanting to chime in on Callahan. Adam, good morning. Go ahead.
Well, Parker killed it, man. Like, that's exactly right. Number one, if you swap the coordinators now, dude, like, he had three in college, and he got better every single time. If you could see it, saying Brian Callahan, he may get better as a head coach, is like us saying, I hope Colt Anderson gets better as a special teams coordinator. Like, the writing's on the wall, dude. We know exactly what he is. He's brick wallpaper. He's phony. He's a fraud. His dad's a fraud. Get them both out. Like, you can't tell me one damn thing they've done that's good since they've been here. Nobody can, dude. Like, you could go, oh, he's helped Cam. No, he hasn't. He was a Heisman Trophy winner. And he can't stand in the pocket for 2 seconds. the whole reason he got the head coaching job, number one, nepotism, we all know that. Number two, he worked with some Hall of Fame players, Peyton Manning, Matthew Stafford. Did they need him? No. Joe Burrow. He almost got Joe Burrow killed, and the guy who he's learned from is currently that got Joe Burrow on the bench for 3 months because he can't protect him. So whatever this cool offense is that the Bengals have that they wanted so bad in Tennessee, it doesn't protect quarterbacks. So what are we doing, dude? Start over. Like, you can't fire enough people offense right now to help him. So these guys aren't catching passes, so his wide receivers coach sucked too. Like, I don't know, dude. Like, am I saying anything that's incorrect here? Like, start over completely on offense. Except for Cam. Am I saying that right?
The only thing you said incorrect is that Cam Ward was a Heisman winner, but everything else,
Nick Frazier.
Everything else was correct. He was a finalist.
That's what I meant.
But yes, no, I agree with you, Adam. It's a good call. Like, there has not been a redeeming quality for Brian Callahan through 19 games, and we went through it yesterday. A Titans Redditor out there put out a chart of Wisenhunt versus Callahan through 19 games, and it was almost identical. Really, the only big difference was that Callahan's teams have turned the ball over more. And, you know, Will Levis, Zach Mettenberger, whatever. Like, it's all kind of the same. I'm getting to the point where I think Brian Callahan is in... He might be in must-win mode, and we'll talk about that next. Is Brian Callahan past the point of no return if he loses this game to the Colts on Sunday? I think so. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you want to text or call, our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up. You're on 102.5 The Game. Next man up, 102.5 The Game. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly. With you on this Tuesday, Titans 0-2, falling 33-19 to the Rams on Sunday, getting ready for the Colts coming up this weekend at Nissan Stadium. And we're asking the question, if Brian Callahan wants any chance to keep his job, does he have to win this game on Sunday?
I'm going to go with no.
Really?
Yeah. It's something I mentioned to you earlier before the show. I think if he plays young offensive linemen, because we talked about Zeitler and... You know, maybe Ali Udo's not the answer for the time being. Put in Brennan Crenshaw Dixon, put in Jackson Slater. Like, if you put those young guys in, I think the pressure is still on Callahan. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think it's to the same degree. Like, say if the Titans improve this Sunday, but yet they still lose, and there's improvement because of that young line, I think the pressure's off just a tad bit.
I think you've got to get a win at some point. Like, you haven't won since Thanksgiving of last year. You got to see results at some point. Like, I get it. The roster's not very good.
Yeah.
But even though the Colts are 2-0, I don't know if their roster's all that good either. Like, Indiana Jones has played well for his first 2 weeks with the Colts, and they haven't punted. They have won games. So credit to the Colts, but I don't think the Colts are a world beater coming in here. Like, this isn't the Buffalo Bills coming in at 2-0. It's the Indianapolis Colts. I really do think the Titans should stack up decently well with this team. And if Brian Callahan wants to keep his job, I think you have to win this game. Because if you fall to 0-3, now you're heading on a 3-game road trip. And the Texans, they're 0-2 too. But watching Will Anderson last night, against a backup tackle.
Monster.
I really don't want to imagine what that would look like against Dan Moore or if J.C. Latham still hurt, whoever is playing right tackle for the Titans. It would not be pretty. The Cardinals are 2-0. The Raiders...
We see that, right?
The Raiders, Tom Brady is bugging conference rooms and getting all the inside information. I'm just kidding. But, like, the odds of you winning two or more of those games on the road trip are not good. So, if you lose Sunday... Odds are you are coming back to Nashville to face Mike Vrabel and the Patriots at 1-5 or 0-6, and you're done at that point.
Yeah,
like you have dug yourself past the point of no return. I think a win on Sunday is crucial. I think it is necessary. If Callahan loses on Sunday, unless something drastic changes over the next month, I think he's a dead man walking.
Let's just say if they do win this Sunday, right? And I think it's still the same outcome regardless if Vrabel and the Patriots come here and they win. I think that is imminent.
It's tough because...
Does history repeat itself?
Right, like, would Amy do that? Probably. Even though it would not look good for her, again, doing it where it looks so petty. Like, that's the issue, is the optics of it looks so petty to fire Brian Callahan after losing to his predecessor. But I think she would do it. I really do. If they are 1-6 after the Patriots game or 0-7 after the Patriots game, I don't think you have a choice. I really don't. And I don't think anyone would blame her at that point. I think he has at least until the Patriots game. I don't think you're going to fire him before the Patriots game. It's just too early. If they're 0-6 heading into it, maybe. I mean, maybe that's the way that Amy avoids having that look bad on her, is just get rid of him before Vrabel comes to town.
I think it's a double whammy.
But, like, I think if they lose Sunday, I just don't see a path forward where Brian Callahan keeps his job. Now, I could be wrong. It all depends on the growth of this offense and Cam Ward, but it feels like if they lose a 9th game in a row on Sunday to a divisional opponent at home and then have to go on the road for 3 weeks, I don't see him making it to November as the head coach of this team.
I think if they lose on Sunday, Amy gives him the grace of that road trip. And then while they're on the road trip, they're just cleaning out his office, and he comes back, it's empty. Like, I think that's what's going
to
happen.
He comes back and his card doesn't work trying to get into the building.
He has the Jamal Adams thing.
Yeah, just the Jamal Adams.
After he's done eating his quiche.
Yeah, thank you. From their little tea party they have on Mondays, that's right.
Yeah, 7988 says, how much control do Chad and Mike have? Honestly, the statement, if they fire Callahan, might come from Chad Brinker. But Amy controls everything. Like, nothing's happening without Amy giving the go-ahead. So, I don't think that Chad and Mike are making that decision. I think it's an Amy decision, even though they might say that it was a football decision for Chad and Mike.
You have opened up a little angry man inside of me, because every time I hear the name Chad Brinker, his name, it should not have immunity. This guy needs to be out of the door as soon as Callahan's out the door. Like, he has the same level of hot seat, in my opinion, as Brian Callahan. And to that point, you look at Brian Callahan's resume. You also look at Chad Brinker's resume, because he's the one that kind of hired all these guys. You have to look at it from that perspective. If he's the middleman, and I will say this, if Amy Adams Strunk fires Brian Callahan after the New England game, or let's say she doesn't fire him after the New England game, and he makes it that far and they're 1-6, that just tells me she's stalling because she doesn't want to fire Chad Brinker and Brian Callahan at the same time.
Yeah, it's a tough situation, because I understand the idea of let Brian Callahan finish out the year, but I also get, like, if you know he's gone, there's no point in waiting around. So we'll see what Amy Adams Strunk decides to do. Like, there's no point in trying to project what she's going to do, because she's shown that she's unpredictable. Yeah. So I don't know when it's going to happen, but I will say, I think if Callahan loses Sunday, it's a when, not an if. Like, I just don't see a path back. And again, he could prove me wrong and they could go on a 5-game winning streak or something like that. But the way it's gone, you're 3-16. The Titans haven't won back-to-back games in 3 years. Like, I think it's going to become more of a certainty if they lose on Sunday to the Colts.
Let me ask you one thing before we go to break. Do you think it's that important to have a guy in Chad Brinker to be the guy relaying the message to Mike Borgonzi and Brian Callahan? Do you think that position is necessary in the NFL?
Not really.
Then why have
the guy? I think that Amy maybe wanted to distance herself from the football decisions. I don't know why Chad Brinker was the choice. Clearly he has gained some favor with her and gained some trust, but I think that's why we don't hear from Amy anymore, is because she has empowered Burke Nyhill to be the business guy, mm-hmm. and she's empowered Chad Brinker to be the football guy. And that's why I wonder if he's ever going to be the one at the front of the line to get blamed. I think there's going to be a point where it happens, but you would think he'd be the next one after Callahan, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're just looking at this rotating, revolving door of blame, last year it was Rand Carthon, the year before it was Mike Vrabel, this year it's Callahan. You would think next year would be Brinker, but I wonder if maybe if they do fire Callahan, they try and get everybody on the same page finally. Because the last few years, it's always been one guy is, they're not on the same playing field. And it's like, all right, well, Rand's the new guy, so we're firing Vrabel. All right, well, Callahan's the new guy, so we're firing Rand. Like, you got to get off of that at some point.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Brinker, I don't know if he's going to ever be the next guy up because it feels like he has Amy's ear. So it'll be interesting. 0388 says, the fact that we're all talking about firing Callahan two games into the season is more proof he should have been fired last year. And yeah, you're right. Throughout the offseason, I was on the give Callahan a chance team, and I wanted to give Callahan a chance, and I feel like I did. But that first game was such a disaster that it already put him in hot seat territory, if he wasn't already in that. And if they can't win football games, eventually he's going to run out of time. But I agree with you, 0388. Like, the story from Jeremy Fowler and Teron Davenport saying that the Titans seriously considered firing Brian Callahan, it really does, in hindsight, look like, yeah, they should have just cleaned house. They really should have. So, but what can you do now? And another texter, let's see. Mike in Lebanon says, we know the Titans will have a different coach next year. Go ahead and change now. Why wait? I gave him another chance, but I don't see it getting better with him as coach. Go ahead and fire him now. They're not going to do that because that looks bad on the team. It looks like they don't know what they're doing, which maybe they don't, but like it looks like that because they're like, why would you give him the whole offseason and fire him after two games? So they're not going to do it yet. I'd say the Patriots game that week is probably the first chance. I'd say the bye week is probably the deadline. If they don't fire him by the bye week, he's going to get the rest of the year. But that three-week stretch from, what, October 19th to, like, November 10th, like, that stretch, that's where I think you could see Brian Callahan get fired. But I think if he loses this game this week, that might be the point of no return for Brian Callahan as the head coach of the Titans. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have thoughts, you can text or call. Our phone line's driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We will get back into the Titans later on in the show, but going to talk some NFL. Since 1970, 64% of 2-0 teams have made the playoffs. Only 10% of 0-2 teams have. You got 10 2-0 teams, 10 0-2 teams. We'll look through who might be able to make a run after a slow start, and who has gotten off to a hot start that's going to fall back to earth at some point this year. Also, Joe Burrow going to miss 3 months. Can Nick Frazier's 15-2 Bengals stay alive despite missing their starting quarterback? We'll get into it coming up next. Jake Lyman, Nick Frazier, Parker Kelly, next man up, 102.5 The Game.